VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, once again. It's 10 o'clock once again. And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I am Steve VanWee.
And I am Adam VanWee.
And if Adam sounds like he's a little further away than usual, it's because he is a little further away than usual. Remoting in from Soccer Dad headquarters in sunny Tallahassee, Florida. Right?
That is correct. It is a beautiful day here.
I don't know what kind of award he's trying to win, but I'm sure he'll get it.
The life of a soccer dad is not an easy one.
Mm. I was just talking to the guys as we were switching shows, and man, I can't believe the miles these people put on. You got a million people at your back door, and you got to go to Tallahassee to get up a soccer game, huh?
They put on a really nice tournament here, so it's good. A chance to play against teams you don't normally play against. It's fun.
Good. Have you had any games yet?
Actually, both of my kids play at 11 o'clock, so okay. I'm going to be jumping back and forth between those two games.
Okay, well, wish them luck from their grandfather and all that. Anyway, welcome everybody, the regulars, and we always thank you and never want to forget to do so, because without you, we got nothing. For the new people out there, if you just happened on the show, or if somebody told you about it, or if we twisted your arm and made you listen, or anything like that, welcome. Try to stick around for the hour. You will probably learn something. I never heard anybody say they didn't learn a thing in an hour. And that goes for me and for Adam as well. So we will sit here for that hour and we'll talk about everything we want to talk about unless you intervene. And all you have to do to change the subject to what you would rather talk about is to pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. Or as Angela would say, to talk to me. And I've always kind of liked that. Anyway, Howard mentioned as he was signing off that it was another really good week in the market. This one, to me, just seemed kind of casually nice. I didn't see much in the way of panicking going on, which is really kind of surprising because we had that big blip in the corona flu reporting. I don't know if it was a big blip in cases so much as reported cases. But the market seemed to shrug that off pretty nicely, too, and we wound up in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I agree. It was kind of a sneaky good week.
Yeah.
It was all 10 sectors were actually up, all 10 major sectors. And I don't know, I was a little bit surprised at how good the week was when I was doing the numbers last night.
You and me both.
So that's always a good thing. It's much better than the other way around, which happens as well sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that the 10 sectors were up. Consumer discretionary, technology, and utilities were all up more than 2%, which was a nice week.
Strange bedfellows there. The utilities,
yeah,
and tech, they're kind of the opposites of the risk spectrum.
Yeah, it couldn't be any more different. The steady dividend payer versus the 100% growth play, for the most part, they're kind of at the opposite ends of the spectrum. So kind of a weird week. But, you know, it's a good sign, too, when you're seeing breadth like that across all sectors. In fact, materials, financials, and consumer staples were all up less than 1%, but still up. So I really like this market right now.
It's almost as if there are people out there that are listening to good advice when it comes to diversifying your portfolio.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the coronavirus fears, and even China was up this week.
It was the biggest non-American stock market performance of the week.
Yeah, up 3.7%. So it really doesn't. I think that despite the media trying to blow this into something it isn't, people are being pretty rational about this. When you realize that the flu kills more people every year than this thing will probably during its, even when the course is finally completely run, then you realize that it's, yes, it's a serious disease, but no, it's not going to, it's not the plague revisited. It's nothing like that.
Armageddon is still waiting on another day.
Right, right. So we even saw oil make a rebound this week, gained 3.5%. You might have noticed that your gas has been a little bit cheaper lately. That's because oil is still down more than 14% on the year. That's been a nice little bonus for the American worker at the pump recently.
Yeah, gold, you know when that'll end, don't you?
Summer driving season?
Yeah, just before the 4th of July would be my guess.
Yeah, I would imagine you're right about that. Although we're not seeing the volatility that we used to see with those cycles.
That's our fault or our credit, however you want to put it, because we supply ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. People used to hate when gas would spike to $4, $3.50, whatever it was.
Yeah, and you could set your watch by it.
Yep, and you're just not seeing that anymore. So that's been one really nice benefit of America getting into the gas business more so than they have been.
Mm-hmm.
The gold and silver and commodities in general had a nice week. Gold and silver went up, and despite a drop in natural gas, which has been so volatile this year or within the last year, it's everything else was up this week. So commodities saw a nice boost. We also saw another nice trend materialize this week. I don't think you can call it a trend yet, but a nice thing happened. We actually saw buying into the close on Friday, and right before a long weekend, I almost expected to run off about 200 points right before the close, because people have been so scared to hold equities over a weekend recently because of the virus, and then we saw the opposite this week. So that's a positive sign for next week, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more.
So we're right in the middle of earnings season right now, and quarter four earnings of 2019 are looking pretty darn good. 66% of stocks are beating on their earnings forecasts, and
a good number.
Yeah, but even better, 65% are beating on revenue forecasts. Yeah. Now
we haven't seen that lately.
And if you listen to the show, that's the number we've really been hoping would come up, and it's still early. We've only seen about 1,100 companies report. Still a long ways to go, but it's a good sign that this quarter might be a little bit better than we've seen in recent quarters. So I'm very encouraged by seeing a number that high.
There are many reasons to expect that would happen, because the employment has gotten so high, and what companies have been lacking over the last 10 years has been the quantity of customers. And they have more customers now than they used to have, and those customers are feeling better about things. So it stands to reason, I think.
Companies have done a great job of improving their bottom line, so improving their profitability. But it wasn't on greatly improved sales numbers. So if they can continue with that level of profitability but at a higher level of revenue, that's going to be a really good sign for the market going forward.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to the short week next week, anticipating that maybe this little run is not anywhere near over yet. And one of the reasons I brought that up, you see the jobless claims, the new claims this week?
Yeah, but I also want to talk about the JOLTS report when we get back. So
yeah, that took a strange turn, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did.
But there's sometimes when governments especially will report numbers and you scratch your head. This doesn't, 2 and 2 isn't adding up to 4 on this thing. And generally speaking, the next time that same number is revealed, there's sort of a little smoothing thing that goes on, like it might have been an outlier. We can't say for sure until next time, but you can talk about that. We've got to take a quick break, pay some bills, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888 for pretty much any kind of application that you would like. The trivia question is going to be kind of a current events related thing. Everybody's probably aware that Tesla's been, if I might, on fire lately? That was pretty bad. But
it's been crazy.
Yeah. It managed to hit $800, closed over $800 for the first time yesterday, a new record. Speaking of which, other new records included the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 and all three of them on Wednesday. And I swear, I poured through every piece of media I could find this morning. You would not know that if I didn't tell you, because they're sure hiding it as always. But I digress. Tesla has been a public company since June of 2000. It sells for $800 a share today. At what price did it IPO, initial public offering price, back about almost 10 years ago, not quite? That is interesting. But it's not as interesting as this little outfit called ARK Invest, which I have never heard of, don't know anything about them, and I'm not here to tell you anything good or bad about them, but they published a little article earlier where they predicted Tesla shares at $7,000 each.
Wow.
$7,000. That story in itself is nothing more than a number. But here's the rest of the story, which wasn't published till the next day. The firm that called for Tesla at $7,000 sold 450,622 shares of Tesla from their own account. How certain are they about their prediction, I wonder?
Yeah, they're really going all in on that.
They stuck their necks way out.
Yeah.
I always get a kick out of things like that. People are so weird. Anyway, back to wrapping up the market.
Yeah, so we got some economic data this week, and it was pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
We had 24 reports, 12 of them beat on their forecasts, and 5 matched, and then the rest fell a little short. Monday started off strong with small business optimism coming in higher than expected. That's an area that we were really hoping to see an uptick in after the China deal got done, and sure enough, it looks like the positive sentiment from that deal being inked was enough to raise that indicator. So I'm glad to see it. I think small businesses get very upset when there is a lot of uncertainty in the market, and that was causing some people some headaches. So that's a good sign. The number one problem that they're reporting, though, continues to be finding and keeping good employees. So I wouldn't say we're in a labor shortage right now, but we are darn close to one.
It's a tight market, we'll put it that way, for absolute certain.
Yeah, if you talk to any small business owner that deals with hiring and, well, mostly hiring these days, because you're not firing a lot of people because you're just happy to find anyone who's willing to do the work. It's definitely going to be a struggle, at least in Florida, from what I understand. I don't know how other parts of the country are, but here in Florida, we hear it a lot.
That we do.
Speaking of jobs, initial jobless claims actually rose slightly, but they still came in below expectations, and the four-week moving average dropped again. So really looking strong on that front. One really weird number, we mentioned this before the break, was the JOLTS, the job openings labor turnover study. We were talking last week about what we wanted to see in this report, and there's been over 7 million open jobs for the last few months. And we both said we'd like to see that number drop below 7, because that would mean people are coming back into the workforce and filling those jobs. Well, we got our wish, but not quite in the way that we wanted it.
True. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, so the number plummeted to 6.4 million from close to 7 million. That is a drop of the magnitude that you would normally see in the heart of a recession.
Which led to my earlier comments about maybe being an outlier that'll smooth its way out next week.
I think that the government really screwed up. I don't think that's a real number. There's nothing else to indicate. There's no flashing indicators that we're in a recession. It just doesn't make sense for 500,000 open jobs to just disappear in a month. And I know they didn't all get filled, because it just doesn't happen like that. They would have been filled slowly over time. And I know that, I'm pretty sure that companies just didn't give up on 500,000 jobs. Oh, we're just not going to fill them. Let's take them off the board. So it just doesn't make sense. Sometimes I question whether the government even thinks about these things before they put out this data.
Yeah, they publish before asking the question of themselves, does it make sense?
Yeah, do the reality check. Is this even feasible? And I don't think it is. So we'll see what happens next month, but it just kind of a head scratcher on that one. The only other number I wanted to mention was retail sales. They came in line with what was being forecast, but at 0.3%, it's a nice increase for January over December, and it just shows you really how strong the consumer is right now. We've just seen month after month after month of solid increases in retail sales, which is great.
So that must have been your little way of segueing me into my Looney Tunes Headlines of the Week segment, right?
Let's hear what you got.
All right. It was from this morning. Good old Yahoo Finance. This one was Market Watch. I'm sorry. Retail sales rose 0.3% in January, the government said, matching the Market Watch consensus forecast. Well, that was the sixth paragraph, but guess what the headline above it said? You'll like this. S&P 500 and NASDAQ end at records to end week amid signs of soft retail sales.
Okay.
I am not making this up. I would not do that. It is just incredible what these people are willing to put in a headline to, I don't know, what, scary or whatever. Yahoo from this morning. How to retire on a $200,000 inheritance. Okay, let's do some math here. $200,000, 4%, $8,000 a year. Okay, so cut your lifestyle down so you only need $8,000 a year and you got it, right?
Good luck. Good luck.
Well, guess what? Again, if you get way under the headlines, several paragraphs down, it says you can do this if you have at least 20 years before you retire and you invest this in the market over 20 years and it performs just average over those 20 years, you'll have enough to assist your retirement. And I would argue that even then, you would have done very little good toward a good, solid retirement. But yes, it would help. How to retire on a $200,000 inheritance? These people.
It's totally feasible as long as you save a bunch of other money.
Exactly. You know, the inheritance thing, we go through this a lot in our day jobs because, let's face it, people are getting older. There's a transfer of wealth coming down now that's around $7 trillion from aging baby boomers and their parents down to the next generation. So, of course, it's going on every day and we see it. But we don't tell people that if you inherit $200,000, you should go in and quit your job first off.
No. In fact, we have told people the exact opposite.
We've had people thinking that that was a really good idea, and we sort of disagree with that. It's, you know, when you look at it, people, if you look at the inverse of what will that money earn for you every year, and we use the safe withdrawal rate to be about 4%, and you just invert that number, what it says is you can calculate how much money you're going to need just by telling us how much income you want to have annually. So whatever that number is, you multiply it by 25, and that's how much money you're going to need to retire that way. Now, from that, you can deduct Social Security income at some percentage that makes you happy. You can deduct any pensions you might have that are ongoing, things like that. But the bottom line is income from investments requires 25 times what you want those investments to pay you, and that is not easy. That said, congratulations to 441,000 Americans who deal with Fidelity alone, who have $1 million saved in their 401k accounts and IRAs. That is a big number that grew substantially recently, as did the average balance, up to about 112,000 now. Americans are doing better saving, and this market is really helping them out. And I just got to say, why not just keep things as they are instead of messing with it? So if you're getting into the market and you're thinking, man, this market's so high, I don't want to invest as much as I would or anything like that, forget it, because you will miss the boat if you don't get in it, stay in it, and just keep doing it. That which makes you rich in the first place will keep you rich as time goes on. Good to remember. And if you ever need a little comforting hand from people like us, it's easy enough to find us. And we want to throw out a phone number and a website for us before the break?
Sure. You can always find us online at www.fanweefinancial.com. And if you want to call us during the day, it's 904-685-1505.
Yep, and lately things have been humming out there. I think people are getting really back to work and into the groove, and the holidays are gone now. We're seeing a kind of a different attitude among people. People are really genuinely happy and robust. Businesses are thriving. Things are just good. We'll talk more and more about that as soon as we get back from a short break. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And before we take our first caller, I want to repeat the trivia question, just in case. It says, Tesla, which just closed over $800 yesterday for the first time, went public in June of 2010. At what price was it taken public? Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Mr. VanWee. How are you?
I am excellent, and you?
Just fine. Beautiful day today.
Isn't it, though? Glorious sunshine, a little chill in the air. Gotta love it.
I'm a native Chicagoan of 61 years, so I've been down here 4 years now, and I'm loving this.
Well, we were about 80 miles north of you. So.
Oh, my goodness.
We know the drill, and it's not fun. No, do you see the ice balls coming off the lake today? It was on the news this morning. There's a certain setup up there where when the waves are not real big, but it's real cold, apparently they form little balls that get washed up onto the beach areas, and they were huge. I mean, not each one. They looked like they're between 6 inches and a foot, but they were all over the place. And you, if you saw it, probably would do what I did and just laugh.
Yeah, exactly. try not to call my friends back home and rub it in.
Yeah, I got over that. I call them anyway.
Good for you.
So what can we do for you today?
I've got a three-part question.
Sure.
And it's not very lengthy, but it's something that's intrigued me. We're in the middle of earnings season, and every company has a number that the street expects as far as earnings per share and revenue.
Mm-hmm.
My first question would be, who is the street? Number two, how do they derive that number? And number three, does it really matter? Because I saw Facebook and PayPal both beat top and bottom, and especially Facebook got clobbered after the numbers came out. So I'm just mystified with these numbers. Where do they come up with them?
Well, I'm going to take the first part right now.
Okay.
And then I'm going to
let
Adam talk a little bit more about the second two. Part one, who are these guys? I have been asking myself that question for decades and decades. Who are they? You know, the air quotes around the they. Who are they anyway? They don't know anything, it seems. They're, you know, a weather forecaster generally has about the same degree of accuracy as these guys who dabble around on the street. So my question and your question are the same, which means I can't answer that. I don't know. But I have no respect for most of them. As to how do they get the number and does it matter, Adam, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. That I actually went to school with some of these guys and girls who do these analyst jobs. They typically are very well-educated investment bankers who spend their lives covering either an industry or a set of companies within an industry, and that is their entire job, to try and figure out and forecast what is going to happen during the next quarter and year and years for these different companies. They don't generally have a lot more information than what you could get publicly. They don't work for the company. They don't They don't have any position with the company. They are completely external. They work for companies like UBS and Goldman and all the big banks. And they use a variety of different methods to come to this, but the most common one is a simple discounted cash flow model. And they have I say simple, but it's actually somewhat complicated. And they try and look at what's happening to the company and the industry and tweak their model to come up with a valuation and a price target that seems reasonable and realistic to them. Of course, it's all based on the assumptions that they put into their models. So it's highly, highly subject to interpretation, and it's almost never right. So in the end, does it matter? No. The only thing that matters is what the collective market, all the investors who are buying and selling stocks, think should happen and what their reaction is to what actually happened. So if the consensus is for company XYZ to make $1 per share in sales and 25 cents per share in profit, and they beat that, but the collective investors really expected more, then your answer is no. It doesn't matter what the analyst thought that they should make. It only matters what every other investor who's buying and selling the shares thought. So that's why you can see such wildly different reactions to beating or missing on earnings. Hope that made
sense. Okay, that does make sense. And you're right. They don't come very close very often. I mean, it's like,
nope.
You know, it's just a shot in the dark, it seems like, and, you know, they're way off.
I think it's best described as educated guessing.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
They make a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do.
These same people.
But it's much closer to an art form than a science.
And a lot of these people work for places like the big mutual funds. And their analysis is what goes into the buy and sell decisions within the mutual fund. So a lot of them you don't really know about. The analysts at the fund companies employ are very quiet about these things. The public ones might be selling newsletters or something like that, too. And how they get selected to be part of that survey, I have no idea.
Wow.
But, you know, there's a lot of countries that don't use the quarterly reporting system. And the take on it, I think for a lot of us, is that when you have a quarterly reporting system and you live and die on your quarterly numbers, the CEOs don't have an incentive to create the most value long term. And because of something that the SEC has called Regulation FD, which think of full disclosure, if a CEO sticks his neck out a little too far and says, well, I think we're going to have a real bang up quarter, and for some reason it kind of falls flat, that can be very, very dangerous to that CEO's job. So they're not going to do that very often. And Ian, is it net good, net bad, or net zero? I have absolutely no idea. As Donald Rumsfeld says, you go to war with the army you've got. Well, we go to the market every day with the information we've got, and you have to just kind of look around and see, does it make sense? The number one question Adam and I ask each other in the office, does it make sense? And if we can't figure it out, then we look for something else. And if it seems to be contrary to common sense, then we ignore it. That's pretty much the only way I can think of to handle it. You know, 24/7, 365, how many cable channels, how many this, how many that? They got to fill a lot of airtime, and they do it. And a lot of it is stupidity. And that's why I spend a little time every week talking about stupid headlines and dumb comments and all that stuff, which is always fun. And I got another couple for you anyway. But, I hope we helped.
You did. I was going to say, I always get a kick out of the upgrades and downgrades. And on any given day, there's somebody that upgraded AMD and then somebody else downgraded it the same day.
Yep.
What you think of the remember the show that used to be on Fox on Saturday mornings, and now I think they run it on the Business Channel a little later. It's called Bulls and Bears, and they talk about one company or one subject or something, and some of them are bullish and some are bearish, And these are some of the smartest people around.
Yeah.
If there's no consensus, what does it mean? That it's a lot of subjectivity.
Period. Right. So, right.
Fun, kind of fun if you play the game well, but if you let it bother you, you're not going to have a good time at all.
And that's okay.
Did you want to take a shot at our trivia question before?
You know, I think I might know this. I hear you're going off the air, so I won't give you the story. But I think it was like $17.50 a share.
You know what? I had it to within 50 cents, and the asking price was $17, which puts you right on the cusp. I will put you on hold, and Alan will get your vitals, and we'll send you a little something, compliments of Mr. Bales. How's that?
Oh, appreciate that very much, guys. Great, great show. I listen every week.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for calling. That was kind of fun. I always love it when we can make fun of these hot shots a little bit. But as Adam said, you know, a lot of them are really smart, very well-educated people, trying to do a very good job for their companies and themselves, I'm sure. But, man, I wouldn't want to do it. It's too much responsibility for me to be too subjective.
There's another part to that answer I want to talk about after the break.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
And I'm Adam Banwee.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. All right, we were wrapping up the question about who are these guys anyway, which kind of reminds me of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid for some reason.
The other thing that I didn't mention in my explanation about why they can be so wrong so frequently is that it's not really a fair game, because the companies can do things to manipulate their results.
Adam.
Think about this scenario. You're in the fourth quarter, and you've had a terrible year, and you've got a client that's about to hit you with a giant purchase order. What do you think you're going to do? You have already had a bad year, and you're publicly traded. Your stock's getting hammered. Are you going to allow that purchase order to come in on December 25th, 26th? Or are you going to try and push that into next year to have a blowout year and hopefully have your stock recover?
Oh.
If it's me, I think that the incentive is probably to push it into the next year. So, and as an analyst, you're not going to know the details of what every salesperson is working on, every deal that's being worked on. It's just not possible, and they're certainly not going to share that with you unless there's some incentive for it to be known. So
it's the old don't go to the mailbox routine, huh?
Yeah, they just don't have the private information if they're operating on the up and up that the insiders of the company have, and so therefore that makes their job that much more difficult. And that's all I wanted to say, is that it's a tough job because you don't work for the company and you aren't allowed to know a lot of things that would help you do your job better.
Called window dressing, where we come from.
Exactly.
And the same thing happens. You'll see a lot of mutual funds in particular that do an awful lot of reshuffling and trading toward the year end, locking in some profits if they want to look good, and not taking them if they don't care, and they might swap this and that, the other thing, some of which can be done with some methods that are, I think I've talked about the Vanguard thing, where they invented a method of taking gigantic sales from one of their mutual funds and putting them in their ETFs without causing a buy and sell transaction to be recorded, and that's going away. That would increase the volatility of the stocks, and if they're really big in those funds, by quite a bit, and might have an impact down the road. There's a lot of complexity, I guess, is what Adam's trying to explain here, and I think he's absolutely right. But it's fun. You know, if you look at a company or look at a publication, a lot of people talk about barons. Some of them will tell you what to buy, and some of them will tell you sectors and all that, but very few will actually get down to the nitty-gritty, but most newsletters and people who write them have an attitude about the market or the administration or whatever. And I have always referred to Barron's as B-E-A-R-O-N-S because they always seem so negative. I found myself getting depressed when I used to read it once in a while, so I just don't read it. No, I'm not depressed. Pretty simple, that, isn't it?
That was a simple answer for a complicated question.
Yeah, ostrich answer. You just stick your neck in the sand sometimes, look the other way, whatever. Never know.
Sometimes I find in our job that's the best way to operate.
And as I was saying earlier, when you can't answer that question, does this make sense? No. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't exist. And, man, has that gotten us through some tough times, too? Absolutely.
No doubt about it. But it all worked out for the best.
It does. It will eventually. All right, IRS, remember a couple of years ago we had a very astute call saying, what's Uncle Sam going to do about the W-4 form now? Because we don't have personal exemptions anymore. And I said, well, look for changes, and we've had a couple of changes since then. For those of you who don't know what a personal exemption is, every man, woman, and child taxpayers got a, it was scheduled to be $4,050 taken off their annual income for personal exemptions. And in the Great Tax Cut and Job Act of 2017, those got eradicated. So the Form W-4, which is what you use to tell your employer how much you would like to have withheld from your check for taxes, those became obsolete. So they've been doing it on some, by guess and by gosh, different changes. Well, now they have a new one coming out. And if anybody is preparing their taxes this year and you find that you're woefully out of line, meaning if you're thousands of dollars under or overpaid, it would probably be a good idea for you to revisit the new W-4 form at irs.gov. And they also have a calculator that you can use to estimate more clearly. Those of you who absolutely love getting big refunds, you know what you're doing, and you've heard a lot of us say it, that you're lending them money for a while, and we would like to see that cut down or more of that money perhaps diverted into tax-deferred retirement accounts. And those of you who are underpaid, you might want to just catch up a little bit. But as it came down, and you'll see a lot of arguments about this, but the latest numbers came out after the Tax Cut Act, and 69% of individual Americans have been shown to profit from it. Frankly, I think that's a little light. I'm not sure how they came up with that. But so far, so good. And now, leaking out of the White House this past week, is that maybe there actually is more to come.
I saw that.
And it's targeting, guess who?
Instead of the middle class.
You got it. And that, people, if we can get a change where the 15% bracket goes up yet another 100,000, you know how much spending power that's going to put in the pocketbooks of how many Americans? And when you're living in a 70% consumer-driven economy, Katie by the door. Go ahead.
That would be such a boost for the middle class. Although I'm sure that you're going to hear that that's going to benefit the wealthy somehow. But no, that would be one of the biggest middle class tax cuts that we've ever seen.
That's right. And I will again remind people that it was the world's biggest rhino, Ryan, who promised this before he left. And then he left town and didn't do it. That does not make it a bad idea. In fact, that probably helps make it a good idea. So check your withholding, and if you need to straighten it out, get it done right away.
The other thing they're talking about, too, is making some of the current tax law permanent. So that would
be another. Oh, they
need
to do that. Yep.
Yeah.
2026 will see the expiration of the individual rates. And if I may throw in another one that I don't know if it's being talked about, let's get rid of the AMT, finally.
That would be great. Yeah. There's no reason for it. No, absolutely no reason for it.
Ridiculous. Well, speaking of taxes, it's inevitable. 6 tax scams that hit Americans every year about this time. One of them is refund fraud. How many of you have or have known someone who went to get a refund and IRS says, I'm sorry, but we already sent your refund? We have had it happen within our client group more than once. Well, now, I have for years told people, if you live in Florida or Georgia or Washington, D.C., you can apply to IRS for a personal PIN number that's only good at IRS. I also said that over time it was going to get expanded. Well, now you can get a personal PIN number in Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Texas, and Washington. If you are in one of those states and listening by internet or whatever, or if you're in Florida, Texas, or D.C. for that matter, get to IRS.gov, the website there, if you put in personal PIN, or get an IP PIN. That will take you to this little section. I think it's a five-digit number. They will not process any changes that are going to affect your particular refund without that five-minute or five-digit PIN being put in there. It's free. It's safe. It's a very, very minor hassle, and you will avoid what we have watched a lot of people have to go through to get it back. All right, a quick note. Of course, we'll be here next week, but 1988, I think, I started listening to talk radio, and it was the early afternoon. The guys had told me, you got to hear this guy. His name is Limbaugh. He's sick. We need to think about him. He's the reason I'm here. See you next week. We'll have more fun and frolic, and hopefully some more really good numbers. Adam and I are both looking for probably a good week in the market. We're very optimistic at this point. Hope we're right, and we'll let you know if we are next week at the same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.